runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 215 with guest Jeremy Thake, recorded Saturday, May 14th, 2011. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hey, this is Richard Campbell from Run As Radio. I'm still at TechEd doing interviews on the floor, and I found Jeremy Thake. Jeremy from AvPoint?
That's right, AvPoint, yep, based in Jersey.
Oh, my goodness. And also a SharePoint MVP.
Yes, that's correct. So I think I was awarded, it seems like a long time ago now, it was July last year. So.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a real good recognition and honor to be part of the community a bit more.
Well, SharePoint, the thing that's interesting about SharePoint is you go from completely free setups that are just part of your Windows license up to these massive SharePoint configurations. And you've done a lot of the high-end stuff.
Yeah, so, as you say, it's kind of, I always say, the gateway drug. So you can have SharePoint Foundation for free as part of your Windows Server license. But
give you a little fix.
Yeah, here we go. You can get addicted to that. And then you go, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just do, oh, look, there's a paid license version.
Yes,
and you can have a standard or an enterprise. And, you know, and the big key kind of header things that the C-level guys like are all in the enterprise version of SharePoint.
Sure. So. What is the shape, you know, how do you... to quantify what makes sense at foundation level, what makes sense at a base license, what makes sense at enterprise license, and when do you start getting into, you know, distributed infrastructure?
Yeah, so I guess really the main thing is load. So how big your organization is, how much you want to actually be doing with SharePoint.
Is this number of simultaneous users?
They have like kind of the request per second. So as soon as you start going over certain boundaries, which I won't throw off the top of my head because it's always changing on TechNet, but you know, you have to start looking at growing this thing out, so load balancing with web front end servers and SharePoint, you know, can happily be built what they call a farm infrastructure,
right?
So you can go from just having a single server farm with SQL and SharePoint all on one server, or you can grow that out so you can have things like an application role server sitting in there, and then you can have web front end roles, which essentially all they do is just fire back requests from end users for page requests and document requests.
So what's the order of decomposition? We start off with one server running SharePoint, SQL Server, everything in it.
And
you
then
pull
you
SQL first server up first?
Yeah, so the first thing you do is pull out SQL.
Right.
And traditionally, they still recommend it, that you should be kind of using physical kit for your SQL environment.
Right.
The next kind of stage I usually see is that they'll put an application server in, so it becomes a three server farm. And that'll have the ability then, the search indexes that are built overnight and the different kind of like timer jobs that are running running on that server.
The application server role comes out of the main SharePoint server.
Yeah, that's
what is
right.
That remaining SharePoint server called? Is that web?
So you have the web front end, yeah.
So it breaks into web front end and application role separated.
Correct. Yeah, and that changed a little bit with 2010 because now you can actually spread out some of the other roles that weren't available in 2007. So some of the farms we've been working with, can grow up to like 30 servers in a production farm. So yeah, when you're getting to that level, it starts to get a little bit more crazy to manage these things.
So 30 servers, what's the split?
So usually, I mean, for those, they're huge implementations.
Sure.
There'll be fast servers in there, which is their large enterprise, the largest scale of search that Microsoft offer based on the acquisition last year or 2 years ago now. And then you'll have, I've seen farms where they have like six web front ends and they'll be serving up an extranet on a few of those servers and then the intranet on some of those other servers as well.
Right.
And then the load balancer from an infrastructure perspective then dishes that out to the correct servers just to kind of spread the load of the requests going through.
And are you typically topping MLB for load balancing or external load balancers?
So any kind of large enterprise, I wouldn't be recommending an MLB at whatsoever. Just because of the scale of what you're doing.
So it's the F5s
Citrix and all those guys.
Juniper.
Very much at an infrastructure level doing that.
Sure.
Because you can start tuning in a bit more from that content delivery aspect.
And you do the load balancing across the web roles. How does the balancing happen across the app roles?
So the SharePoint does all that. It's natively itself. So you declare that particular roles run on particular servers, and then when SharePoint has a job to execute or a process to run, it'll actually going to make sure that it's run on those particular servers. So it's quite key to make sure that you're not running particular roles on the same box if you are going to spread out like that. And there's lots of guidance on TechNet around, you know, going from a one server to a three server to six servers and then on, you know, pushing it out from
that. So there is a clear progression that Microsoft maps out
for you. Yeah, that's right. So they have like, and they have kind of boundaries in terms of how many users and what size you're going to in terms of the corpus of your data as well.
Is the utilization fairly symmetrical? I would think that different SharePoint apps end up with needing different mixes.
That's right. So a lot of the larger organizations will have separate farms for different things that are going on. So they'll have an internet facing farm that'll be sitting there within their environment, which might look completely different to an intranet farm.
The internal farm.
Because the content in the intranet typically stays quite static. So you have things like the PDFs that the HR department are publishing.
Sure.
The marketing team are publishing press releases internally and those kind of things. But the frequency of that data is quite low. Whereas a collaboration farm may need quite a large server
and
environment.
Constant change.
Because it's constant change. You know, if you've got 20,000 people in your environment, and if they're anything like me, where they're doing control every 2 seconds because they've been burnt in the past by losing documents, that's all going back to the server and chatting away.
And
so
it's all those trips
that's
over and over.
So,
again.
I mean, a lot of the time, to be honest, I've never come across one environment that's the same.
Mm-hmm.
TechNet, they do a very good job of giving the rough guidance, but you do have to do some monitoring, some testing to yourself to see whether that kind of environment is going to work for you.
Well, and it seems that one of the big keys to SharePoint is the search element. And you've mentioned a couple of times just a few minutes we've been talking here that what's the search implementation and how many cycles are we going to need for that?
Yeah. And look, FAST does make it even more complex because there's a huge white paper, which I have read, not cover to cover, but they go from saying, well, you can have one server and then the next step for them is nearly six servers.
Wow.
So you can break out the roles that big. So it does get quite complex from that aspect. And again, it's not designed just to search fast. You can crawl external websites. You can crawl, SQL databases and get your business data in that way. And then you have third-party vendors such as BI Insight and stuff that then connect off to things like Lotus Notes and Exchange.
Sure.
So you can basically serve up like a Bing-like search engine, but enterprise internally facing.
And just wondering, you know, when you talk about highly interactive data like the collaboration data, how quickly that gets indexed in those scenarios.
So, yeah, and look, and then there's a bit of discussion at the minute, and of course I have to mention cloud at least once in this interview, right?
Of course.
So Office 365 has the search built in, but there are no controls currently in the beta to actually throttle that. And obviously organizations, like I've worked with organizations, say we want that up there within 5 minutes of the customer clicking save. And you're like, well, it's pretty unrealistic to have to go away and crawl the entire corpus. It's not event-driven indexing. It has to just spin through everything.
It's a full rebuild of the index each time.
That's right, yeah. Well, there's an incremental one, but it still takes time to run the incremental.
Okay.
So, again, depending on how large your corpus is and how long it takes to re-index that at an incremental stage and a full stage, 5 minutes isn't going to cut it for a large organization with terabytes of data in there.
Sure. It takes a bit of time.
That's right. And, yeah, so that again, it depends. It's probably the best answer with SharePoint with a lot of things. So,
absolutely. You know, you mentioned the cloud. I got to wonder, does it make sense for us to be scaling up our own SharePoint implementations now? Is it just better to move to 365?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. I think it's going to be the discussion point for a long, long time yet.
Right.
My personal opinion is that I think most large organizations aren't going to jump straight in. I think what they'll do and what we're seeing with a lot of our larger enterprise customers is they'll dip their toe in.
Yeah.
And the most natural one to go up there is collaboration, team sites.
Yeah. I mean, I when I look at Office 365, the thing that everybody's grabbing onto is Exchange.
Yeah.
That's just like the easy win.
That's
I don't
right.
want to run mail anymore.
Yeah.
We understand mail. We trust that this will work and they do it.
That's right.
But SharePoint's a more complicated beast because it's so customizable.
Yeah, and it's customizable and there's so much there you can do with it in the cloud. I mean, it is a limited subset of features that are available on-premise or now they're calling the private cloud.
Right.
Just to keep everyone on their toes with their lingo. But yeah, so effectively, I think it will be just the kind of the spin up of new team site, and they can collaborate there with their documents. They can have a shared calendar and task lists, and they can run some workflow in there. But I don't think people are going to be pushing up their entire intranet or their entire document management system.
And that seems to be the reality is that there's not a lot of migration to cloud. It's greenfielding to cloud.
Yeah,
something new up there.
We're talking to, I mean, smaller businesses are doing it because they can see the cost savings in not having to manage that and not having to have all that physical or virtual hardware up there. Whereas large enterprises, don't see that cost saving as much.
They've already made the investment. They have the skilled people and they have the equipment.
And some of the interesting things we've been finding, because obviously AvePoint has a product that will actually migrate content from an on-premise solution into the cloud,
right?
Is that there are lots of reasons why they can't just scan Microsoft the database at a certain point in time and then just give it to Microsoft for them to restore in Office 365.
Sure.
Because they don't guarantee anything less than a two-week downtime in terms of that snap of moving
that
content.
Wow, that's a long
time. Or you can FTP the database to them, but obviously large organizations aren't going to be FTPing 50 terabytes of data up there.
Well, you could, but it's going to be a while.
And when are you going to do it? And where are they going to access it while that's happening? Is it read-only?
Yeah.
So for large organizations, that really isn't going to cut it. So Greenfields is definitely the way that
it's
people are
dipping
in.
It's so hard to migrate. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And for questionable benefit.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I think like this issue will resolve itself over the next few years as the new stuff is built in the cloud and we don't have to migrate.
That's right. And Microsoft starts switching on more and more features that are available in on-premise that are stopping people from moving to the cloud because they need those things.
Yeah, I do think that Exchange 2010 and especially SP1, they clearly did some iterations that were designed to make Exchange more cloud friendly.
Yeah, that's
right. And SharePoint hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, so they introduced a few things in 2010, such as the sandbox solutions.
Right.
So now you can do custom development and build WSPs that can run in the cloud and won't affect anyone else that's like kind of multi-tenant on
the
same farm.
So this concept of real multi-tenancy.
That's right.
But which seems unnecessary when you're working within an organization, but as soon as you start thinking like this, it makes sense.
And it does actually make people a lot kind of, they have to think a bit more on-premise as well, because, you know, there is that concept that HR might go and get some developers in to build a product for them.
Yes.
And then IT might be building the internal thing. And then, you know, why is the performance of their servers going down? And it's because HR, you know, maybe have got a guy, a boy in a book, and sat him down, and he's building products and pushing it into production.
Yeah, and so he's burying the servers.
That's right. So the sandbox solutions is a way of actually preventing that from actually happening on-premise as well as in the cloud as well. So that's good.
What is sandboxing actually doing?
So what it actually does is, and obviously there's a performance implication with it, is it actually will execute the code that you've written and deployed into the sandbox solution in a separate worker process.
Okay.
But SharePoint actually monitors things like how many exceptions it's throwing, how long it's holding onto the CPU, how long the queries are taking on the SQL database. And there's certain thresholds that if it goes over that amount in a day, it gets a naughty resource point. And if it reaches a certain amount of resource points, it switches it off.
Right.
So if you are writing a bad piece of code that's leaking memory, which again is still an issue with 2010 with SharePoint in certain places,
sure,
then you're going to get cut off straight away. What a lot of people don't realize, though, is that it won't just cut off your sandbox solution. It cuts off all the sandbox solutions running in that site collection. So if you've got one bad egg in there, it's actually going to affect all of the different sandbox solutions, which I think is going to upset a lot of customers when they start realizing this in a bit more, because most people I speak to just assume it would just switch off the bad one.
Yeah, well, it seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, we've had a few discussions with the product team around it over the last year when they were designing it. And they couldn't really come up with a straight answer of why that decision was made.
Yeah.
That's just how it's going to roll, unfortunately.
But I mean, the other thing about being a sandbox, you could be monitoring this and seeing that this is a troubled system before it gets to the shutdown.
That's
point.
Right. And there's no historic view, so you can only see the daily stuff. So
right. You'd
have to write some kind of nifty PowerShell to start pulling out, you know, is there anything that particularly trending that are bad over the last year or whatever. Obviously, I think that stuff will get there, but
Like I said, naughty points, right? As soon as any of these things land a few naughty points, I want to know.
Yeah, raise a bug in TFS, you know, is that kind of thing that would be quite nice.
Something to look at. We want to know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see the beginnings of that clearly showing that the next upcoming versions of SharePoint are going to be much more cloud-centric.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there'll be a lot more play around that whole concept. I mean, we've already seen with the beta being released that they've already switched on public websites being available now in the cloud, which wasn't there when they first released the beta. It just suddenly appeared the other day on the administration console. So
sure.
I think they're already seeing that there's going to be companies that go, well, you know what? We don't want to host an internal SharePoint farm and poke it out through the firewall and serve it up. We don't want to have to worry about that. Let's just put it up there. So I think that'll be another one other than collaboration that people will start to hit up.
Start to show.
Yeah. But again, there's a lot of effort needed to get a decent web content management site up. I run a site called nothingbutsharepoint.com, which is running on 2010.
Oh, yeah.
But there's been some serious effort with my developer hat on, writing all the customizations to get that thing doing what WordPress does out of the box.
And I think And the other thing I've found is that when it comes to scaling SharePoint, the custom implementations tend to have more problems.
Yes, because there's that many more moving parts in there that typically if you're doing customizations, you're poking at lots of different areas of SharePoint.
Right.
And the monitoring, unless you're looking right at the log file and seeing all the threads coming through, is quite hard without switching stuff off and seeing suddenly when all the lights go green.
Right.
And Sandbox Solutions will help with that, but there's still going to be the other issues as well.
Yeah, it is. But generally, when I think about a big SharePoint installation, it's typically that collaboration, many groups of people,
or
document stores.
Yeah, and that's the ones where you're going to see SQL really going crazy.
Yeah,
and the DBAs and the server guys are going to be able to see that stuff going on, but it's hard to articulate exactly what's raising those issues or raising those performance bottlenecks.
Where do you fall on the virtualization of SharePoint? Is it a natural, or you know, when you start talking about those farms, are they bare metal?
So most of the large organizations we deal with will still stick to SQL being a physical environment.
Right.
They'll cluster it, so they have that high availability and everything else that comes with clustering. But they do tend to virtualize the web front end roles.
Right.
Because they're not really, you know, all they're doing is calling back through to the web databases and throwing up the content.
Sure.
But the other one that they do tend to physicalize is the search indexing. That's very resource intensive in an IO perspective. And usually that's the one that you have to look out for as well, other than SQL.
Well, and it's not like, I mean, virtualization generally doesn't eat a lot of performance. It's really, if it's consuming the whole machine, why bother?
That's right.
Search indexing will really consume a whole machine.
Yeah.
Big hardware, many cores at once.
You'll still see it spiking up and down at 100% for a long, long time.
Wow.
So it's pretty impressive to see, but yeah, it definitely does need that kit. What we also find is with the virtualization is people will just chuck it all on one host. And obviously that's not the most sensible thing in the world to do. So I think people are still learning those lessons around kind of splitting these things up over multiple hosts and having that kind of redundancy at that level.
Yeah, so what system center virtual machine manager is all about, being able to see all those roles
and
let's get these guys under their own machines
and
balance that load out a little better.
Yeah, and I think, especially with the release of the new virtual center and stuff, I think that a lot of that will become a lot easier in terms of the monitoring aspects and the management of those things. Whereas at the minute, you know, you ask an admin to do something like that, and they're kind of cringing and going, really, you want me to move that? And,
yeah.
How am I going to do that? So the management tools will get a lot better for the admins around that space as well.
Still obviously areas of maturation around that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the other thing from an administrative perspective is the service packs and the updates.
Mm-hmm.
There are some myths around what you can do and what you should be approaching with in terms of patching these things.
Really?
The biggest myth, I think, which is, you just think it'd be right, but Windows Update will actually patch SharePoint. That's actually incorrect. You actually have to download the service packs, service pack one for 2010.
So SharePoint is not part of Windows Update.
No, that's right. And there was a big kind of, again, debate in 2007 about what they were going to do there.
Yeah.
But they decided that this thing was just too much of a big beast. The update process was far too complex to actually go ahead and try and do that patching.
And you don't see a lot of hot fixes for SharePoint. They tend to wait for service packs.
So there are cumulative updates every other month
that
come out, and they kind of tackle the real bugs that have been raised.
Only install if you need it.
Yeah, and basically on the KBs, they'll explain in great detail exactly what they fix.
Mm-hmm.
But the generality is don't put it in there unless you really, really need that particular thing done.
Right.
The service packs then rolls all that goodness up into one service pack, typically with a few extra features as well as some bigger bug fixes.
Right.
And those things will, you know, help in terms of that life cycle. But they come out usually every 18 months,
right.
And we'll get two of those per major release.
Are we on our second one for 2010?
So Service Pack 1 was literally just announced on Monday.
Oh, okay.
Which is
pretty good. It means that they went a long time before Service Pack 1.
Yeah, they've been brave. I mean, it's been great. I mean, the cumulative updates have really addressed some of the bigger issues around the user profile sync service, which has been a bit challenging in 2010. And that's probably as far as I'll go with that one. But the cumulative updates did fix that.
Right.
But they've kind of been patient and waited with Service Pack 1. As part of their roadmap, they had that date kind of in mind. So
sure.
It allows people to plan ahead and actually, you know, decide how they're going to approach patching these farms and testing the updates before they could do this in production, which I hope everyone's doing who's listening to this podcast and not just running that straight into production.
Patch it all. Yeah. Keep it up to date. It's worth it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around the governance of SharePoint? SharePoint can become very viral in some organizations.
Yes. So the governance is a big word, encapsulates lots and lots of different things.
Yeah. It mostly encapsulates slapping people's hands for installing stuff they shouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in my mind, it kind of covers lots and lots of areas. From a growth and a kind of adoption perspective, it can mean a lot of things. I find in an organization, it naturally is just one of those things that gets installed.
Yeah.
You get these power users that then suddenly become champions, see the value in it, and they slowly go around communicating with different organizations within the larger companies, and it just grows. And you're right, it is like a big virus in terms of the growth. From a governance perspective, yes, I do recommend that there is a council form that has some kind of control and agreeance on what goes in there, what doesn't go in there. And they can kind of be like that point of call to discuss, you know, I have this business application I'd really like to build. Someone keeps mentioning SharePoint to me. Is this right? Rather than kind of them going away and then going to IT at the end of the process and going, okay, we've just built this thing. Can you look after it for us?
Yeah.
The other thing with the council is that it allows these guys to be the champions of that within the organization, because a lot of time organizations have it, but they don't leverage it. They don't get enough of the value out of the tool. So the council from that perspective can do that aspect. What I don't recommend is writing a war and peace document on, you know, this is what you're going to have to do, and he's going to have these responsibilities,
right.
And you know, and it never gets read ever again.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's disappointing because it does happen.
And it's a lot of work, but it's not actually effective if it's not going
to
communicate.
That's right. It's better to have a very short wiki, possibly, that is always moving, is always continually improving, and keep it short because no one's going to read it if it's 100-page. I've seen a 1,000-page governance document before. It's just crazy. Keep these things short.
Well, and I'm also a big believer in making it a fairly positive document. It's like, hey, we want you to be successful with SharePoint.
That's
we
right.
like it too.
Yeah.
Here are some things we do inside of our organization that make sure that things get backed up, that it works the correct way, that we're not exposing data we're not supposed to. You know, all of those governance.
Yeah, so that's
items.
Right. So then, you know, so the short form one will just kind of talk about disaster recovery and the SLAs and RPO and RTO and all those good things that I think people just assume that if SharePoint goes down, they can spin it back up again in 5 minutes, which isn't the case.
No.
Especially if you're using the out-of-the-box backup and recovery tools. So, obviously, again, AvePoint have a backup recovery tool that makes that a lot quicker.
Yeah.
The biggest thing we've heard this week is the whole concept of I've accidentally deleted my document and I've accidentally deleted it from the recycle bin. And it's been 30 days, so it's been deleted from the administration recycle bin. Can you go get me that document back? And the IT pro's like, right, where does that go?
Yeah.
So he has to go and get the full backup, which could be anything up to, you know, 400 gig. He's got to copy that off of a tape onto a server. He's going to have another farm to restore into. Then he's got to go find that document because typically the guy doesn't know where it is. So some of the more advanced tools like AvePoint will actually allow you to search within a backup and actually granularly just restore that one file. So those things are just, you have to be aware of those kind of scenarios and SLAs around if you delete a document, these are the likely times it's going to take to get it back.
Right.
And I think sometimes setting those expectations up front makes people a little more careful when they start deleting things in their SharePoint environment.
Don't be dumping that mail, that garbage can so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, take it seriously.
Or the size growth is another issue with governance.
Sure.
What are we allowed to put in there? We were talking to a customer yesterday and his SQL server bloated and pretty much fell over because it ran out of space. SharePoint databases are black boxes, so it's very hard to see exactly what was causing that.
Sure.
So he had a look, digged around, and it turned out that someone on one of their My sites, where they didn't have quotas set up to restrict how big they could get, was backing up his entire Windows 7 laptop inside to SharePoint as
awesome.
A file storage. Yeah.
Dragging and dropping the whole machine
that's
in there.
That's right. So quotas are important in SharePoint. And again, that's something that you need to set those expectations up front.
Yes.
And,
thou shalt not drop your laptop in SharePoint.
Yes, that's right. Or MP3 file, you know.
Yeah.
Using it as a Dropbox is not a good idea. So all these things, you know, have to be discussed, much like if you're managing Exchange or any other product in the Microsoft family. But I guess SharePoint just has a lot more end-user facing things that people can do with it.
And it tends to be the dumping ground, right?
This is the
modern My Documents.
That's
where stuff ends up.
And we're seeing more and more things going in there that really shouldn't be and should be looking at other Microsoft products.
Well, let's face it, we're encouraging them. We want them to use SharePoint.
That's
you know,
right.
you started out at the beginning of your organization saying, no, you need to put that in SharePoint. Put it in SharePoint. Now we were complaining they're putting too much stuff in SharePoint.
Yeah, and they've done a lot around, you know, getting the document management aspects of it closer to things like Documentum and OpenText and those kind of areas.
Right.
So people are now looking at this and considering it as an enterprise document management system as well. So there's a lot of thought going into, well, how do we grow this thing? How do we manage, you know, turning off our file shares and getting all this data inside SharePoint? So I think in the next year, that's going to be really where the maturity is inside that enterprise
document
management.
Really be that. That's the only path to store things.
Yeah, that's right. Because end users love it. They don't traditionally like these old school document management systems, which were really built for records managers who, you know, wearing cardigans and the sandals with white
socks. The library types.
That's right. Sorry to any librarians listening to this, but you know, they're not, they weren't designed for those end users to make it easy. You know, it wasn't designed for, right, okay, we want to minimize this to three clicks and that's all we're doing.
Right.
So, and so SharePoint is very, very friendly for people. They're used to Office, they're used to being in Word and PowerPoint and Excel. And it just works really nicely with SharePoint.
I think that the Office 365 angle is another part where governance is being circumvented. That, you know, I've talked to lots of organizations where their IT group started billing the divisions, trying to, you know, show where their budget was going. And you know, another division would look at the price tag of that local IT and say, hey, I can go stand up SharePoint in 365 for $6 a person.
Yeah,
I'm out of here.
Yeah, why are you charging me all this money? Yeah. For, and again, that's the storage aspects of it. So it's a lot to do with not just the cost of SharePoint as a licensing aspect, but, you know, if you're going to put 30 terabytes of data into SAN storage, that's going to get very expensive per gig. So and this is where you start talking about the remote blob storage and kind of extending your data outside of SQL, where it's very expensive, onto NASes and even onto things like Azure and Amazon EC2 and things to actually really make that size of data be cheaper to store from there.
Yeah, and actually, I think that's the classic thing of, you know, folks that just don't understand the full cost of what they want.
Yeah.
And they salespeople that are willing to sell you the first taste for a low price.
That's right. Get you in the door. Back. Yeah. And it's very hard to get off it once you've actually opened it up to the organization when they start using
that particular path.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously from AvePoint, I think it's largely their business is tooling for SharePoint.
That's correct. I mean, we've been around for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. We started off with something called Sitebin, which essentially still is alive and well and kicking today. And the concept is that you can kind of delete a document and you can get it back out of the recycle bin.
Right.
But you can actually delete a site. There is no concept of a recycle bin. So back 10 years ago now, we actually built that kind of site bin access on the original V1 of SharePoint. So, and we've come a long way from there. I mean, we started off playing with the backup and recovery story.
Yeah.
And then
the early SharePoints were basically backup resistant.
That was right. I mean, you had you got the file. There's a lot of moving parts. You've got the file system. You've got the GlobeAssembly cache, and you've got all the databases, the registry, etc. So, you know, we've tried to make that as easy as possible for people. We have the granular restore story as well. But then we've moved into other areas around compliance and auditing. We also did a lot of migrations. So a lot of people are switching off the old enterprise content management systems and moving to SharePoint. So we did a lot of work in the migration field. And we also do a lot of work in storage optimization. So I was mentioning about how we can store these things in NAS and tier 3 storage, such as the cloud. We have all the intelligence around, you know, business ruling around if this document hasn't been accessed for 6 months, well, let's go and ship that to a cheaper storage location.
Right.
Yeah. So
not everything has to be SSDs.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. No, that's going to work out quite expensive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really where we're coming from is in terms of trying to optimize your storage and save your money in the long term.
And I think it's one of the measures of the success of a product that a third party ecosystem can grow up around it to provide more expensive tooling.
Yeah,
for a price.
That's right. I mean, you have to have that discussion. You've already bought SharePoint. Why do I need to spend more money?
Right.
But Microsoft have put their hands up and they've just said, you know, like we can't build everything.
Yeah.
We're going to focus on the core. It is a platform.
Yeah.
And then let our ISVs go away and build some amazing products on top of it. And it's a great ecosystem. I mean, the stand floor here is, you know, there's a fair few great vendors out there for just purely SharePoint play people. So
and there's an ROI to be had here.
Yeah.
Do you really want to try and roll this yourself, or is it worth buying a product
that's
to save you the time?
Yeah, and I guess that argument happens across the stack entirely. But in SharePoint, you know, the custom build versus buy is a big decision. And we're seeing more and more people now realize that they can't get away with customizing this thing because they've got to maintain it. They've got to look after it. Every time a service pack comes out, they've got to go back and check everything.
Yeah, the cost of ownership is higher than you think. And,
yeah.
And I've seen that more and more, the great resistance to significant customization of SharePoint.
Yeah.
It's a path you go down, and the first few steps aren't a big deal, but eventually you get tangled up, and then it's a rebuild. It's, you know, becomes a huge project.
And I guess from a developer perspective, it has got easier. There are a lot more information, and I think there's about 50 books out already for SharePoint 2010.
Sure.
So people can get into it very easily, but I think sometimes, you know, they don't read all the right material, and things get pushed into production environments that actually kill the servers and cost the organization a lot of money. So I think there needs a bit more thought in the organization around that.
People underestimate how much we're talking about when SharePoint's become successful for a company. That
yeah.
It, you know, people drop their laptops in it. It ends up being a lot more data than you realize.
That's right, yeah.
It outgrows expectations.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that story has always been around with other enterprise document management systems. But mm-hmm. I think SharePoint, as you say, like it's that story where, you know, you're not just saving it on your laptop anymore. It's going in your My Documents.
Right.
It's going into your My Site. It's going into a team collaboration area, which is accessible. Things like you're reducing your email traffic and your email load within Exchange because you're not sending the same document to 10 people as attachments.
Sending links to it.
You're sending links to something that's stored inside SharePoint. And I guess, you know, it's always been there, but I think because SharePoint makes it so easy, people are actually doing that now. And so it has knock-on effects to things like the size of your Exchange and also things like Exchange public folders that are still hanging around are starting to become more document-centric and more structured and therefore going inside SharePoint.
Yeah, I think the SharePoint solution is a better solution for that. They've been trying to make public folders go away for a long time.
Yes, we were having a discussion in one of the large organizations here that basically told Microsoft they couldn't turn it off.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing because they actually had announced it and then they retracted and said, okay, we're continuing support
and
for
they
it.
And they didn't pull any punches.
Yeah.
We had some very big customers come to us saying, you won't be doing that. So we're not doing that. Yeah.
And that's the first time I've heard that story this week, but it's pretty amazing.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
I think SharePoint's a better store, but...
Yeah.
We got to get to, it's hard to get there.
Yes, that's right.
Maybe there's a product in there somewhere. The public folders to SharePoint migration.
Yeah, AppPoint has that too, actually.
Yeah, you already built it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hilarious. Hey, Jeremy, it's been really fun talking
to you. That's great.
Thanks so much for having
me. Yeah, it's good to see you again as well.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.